Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I'm Ross Bacon. I'm joined by my co-host Mike McQuiggan. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing? You guys
And
all
as
miss
usual.
Ross doing his best impression from Bruce Almighty.
That's right. Blah, 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 blah. Completely screwed up the opening. But regardless, we're going to do it live, as Bill O'Reilly would say. But we're to do drink, talk about movies. And tonight we are finishing our little mini remake month with another shot-for-shot remake. So we bookended this with shot-for-shots. The first week was just, an experiment in how insufferable a movie can be made identically twice. This one, though, on the other hand, is a legendary movie in Psycho, remade by a legendary director in Alfred Hitchcock. Played legendarily by everyone involved. And then Gus Van Sant came along in 1998 and was like, you know what? Let's do it over again with Vince Vaughn and Ann Hirsch. How about
I don't know
that?
what you're talking about. They never remade Psycho. Didn't
What'd they
happen.
do?
Didn't happen. That movie does not exist. 1998 Psycho. I don't know what you're talking about.
This is going to be a quick episode tonight. So all we're going to do is say how great the original one is and how the other thing we watched was not a thing, apparently. It was all just a figment of our imagination.
It's a repressed memory that the collective human consciousness should just shove to the side and just no longer acknowledge.
It does a couple interesting things, but we'll get into that. But yeah, so we're gonna bookend it here. We're gonna do another shot for shot remake, and this time it's a legit classic, not just any cult what the fuck. But before we talk about that, we gotta talk about what we're drinking. So Mike, what do you got?
All right, so I decided to go with the theme psycho, in that what I am drinking, only a psychopath would do.
Okay.
Or not necessarily beer related, but this is something like a six would make, just like mixing random shit together. So I
Sure.
took three beers that I did not think would go together at all. And I decided to put them together and see how it went.
Just to
One
figure
of
it out.
those beers was from Brickworks Brewing in Delaware, which is their PsyOps Fruited Sour Ale with Habanero.
Okay.
One is, to even step up the psycho game even further, is my beer from Dewey Beer that cost me $25 that I am putting into this
Got
experiment.
to throw that in there. Absolutely.
Their pomegranate cranberry strawberry muffin beer. And then
Of course.
just to take the edge off, I have Irish Queen from Bonesaw,
Nice. Nice. There
a
you go.
Irish coffee cream ale. So I
Sure.
don't know about you, but I think habanero coffee cream and all of those fruit muffins mixed together sounds delicious.
Sure.
Look at how good this color looks.
Looks like caramel, man. It's got a weird look to it. He's got in the giant fishbowl as per usual. How that one tastes there. That's a fun face to
Oof. It's
make.
not as bad as I thought because the sour with habanero just overpowers the other two.
Yeah. I could see
Ain't
that.
great. Not endorsed for collaboration.
We should probably leave that one on the cutting room floor, but yeah, so I'm also rounding out the end of my most recent cart to six pack. Edmunds Oast Brewing Company, which is in Charleston, South Carolina, they have their something called Premium Blonde Ale, which just has fridge on it. And I'm sure Norman Bates's fridge is filled with some fun stuff if we were to ever happen to look in it. But it's 5%. It's a good blonde ale. It's just a straight up blonde ale. There's nothing fancy about it. There's nothing bad about it. It's just a smooth, easy drink. Congratulations, South Carolina. But yeah. So now, Mike, how are we going to break down the OG Psycho with its attempt at a remake?
All right, so we're going to do Norman Bates, Marion Crane, Lila Crane, Sam Loomis, and the detective. So those are our five characters we're going to do direct comparisons for.
Yes, correct.
And I was like, I was trying to think of some way we could give 98 a win, but I thought it didn't deserve a win, actually. I was like, I don't want to give it pity points. I was thinking maybe we could do which movie surprisingly got a decent performance from William H. Macy, which movie felt the need to include a butthole.
I was gonna say, there's the category right there. Best on-screen butthole.
Which movie could potentially be a prequel for Lord of the Rings?
True, true, yeah.
True, but no, true. I was like, this movie deserves nothing. I should give it zero positive reinforcement for existing, and no one should be happy about it.
The funny thing is, I forget who I saw it was. Oh, it was T.I. West. He's quoted as like being like on board with the remake. He's like, yeah, I'm a fan of it. So this is the dude that did X. This is the dude that did Pearl. This is the guy that's going to do Maxine. And I was like, he's like on board with the remake simply because he said that basically it's like he gives it credit for existing, and then like that's it. He's kind of like, Gus Van Sant had the balls to make it in color. Moving on. And I'm just like, he's like, I'm not against it. He's like, he just did it. But the best part is that Gus Van Sant like responded to the criticism of his movie, which was almost universally negative. He responded to the criticism by basically saying, he's like, I remade it so no one else would. It's like, is that a thing that needed to happen though?
It seems like someone else might have done it better.
Like, was the original Psycho in danger of being remade? I don't think it was.
Guys, oh, here. I'll give us a sixth and seventh category. Which movie did the Marion half of the movie better? Which movie did the Lila half of the movie better?
Okay. We can do that. That'll kind of give us more to talk about when it comes to those respective characters, because
we can kind of do it as like 2 points, but when we talk about Marion, we'll talk about Marion's half of the movie, and when we talk about Lila, we'll talk about Lila's half of the movie.
Yeah, then of course there's, there could also be the best cover song score, basically. Like Danny Elfman took Herman's score and just did it again. And then in the back, like, okay. So maybe we add a freebie to Psycho 98 in the form of best Rob Zombie song heard very far in the background of a scene.
I think Rob Zombie went back in time, and there is a Rob Zombie one in Psycho 1960 that actually is better.
That would be, I know, it would almost have to be like Living Dead Girl 1960. That'd just be good.
By association, it's better.
Right. Yeah, it's there. Like, the thing is, and we'll get to it in the individual breakdown, but there are choices made in the 98 one with the performances that it almost shows you how good the original was for not going down those routes, And it's like, it reinforces it.
Which scene where the boss sees her at the traffic light is more reminiscent of Marcellus Wallace?
Right. What the fuck?
Well, I guess Marcellus Wallace would be reminiscent of Psycho, but 1998.
It would have to be the original, yeah. Yeah, because
1998 Psycho can be reminiscent of Marcellus Wallace.
Right. Yeah, it's a little bit of a chain there, It's, by default, one happens to win. But, all right, so why don't we start off with whatever our first category was going to be?
Let's start off with Sam Loomis, because I feel like he's the least important of the.
is, and I could almost get this is almost a freebie for 98. It really is. Simply because Viggo Mortensen has much better screen presence than John Gavin. I mean, it's John Gavin is just one of those dudes in the 1960s that was in movies that had that chiseled jawline, had that black, dark, like the dark hair, and just looked like a leading man type, you
Yeah.
know? And that
He
was
was
it.
Yeah. He's very reminiscent of like the Jimmy Stewart archetype.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and that's the thing with Hitchcock movies. There's a lot of dudes like that in his movies. But the thing is, they're usually famous actors that are like that. Whereas John Gavin is John Gavin. He's like, he's the man. Oh, the man died on my birthday in 2018. Good for him. But the man is so forgettable, even as Sam Loomis. It's like,
That's I remember did you ever watch this was definitely after your time Epic Rap Battles of History on YouTube?
no, I've heard of it though.
There's one where there's just a bunch of famous directors, but it starts as Steven Spielberg versus Alfred Hitchcock, and one of
Okay.
the lines Spielberg has is "You produce Jimmy Stewart making one of two faces."
Right. Yep. Yeah, and I'm looking over Gavin's filmography, and Psycho and Spartacus are the only things that he actually like that kind of stood the test of time. Everything else is those just like forgettable 60s and 70s movies, you know. Then he jumped into TV shows for a while. But yeah, he's done nothing. But like, it's obviously it's Viggo Mortensen in 98 playing like a swinging dick, like cowboy type. He's almost playing, it reminded me of Brad Pitt and Thelma and Louise. Like, that's who he plays, kind of. And it's kind of funny because it's like, I would almost want to see those two dudes like try to like fight for Marion Crane or, you know, for even Thelma or Louise, you know?
I'm changing the rules of the breakdown slightly. Different categories are worth different amounts of points. I'm afraid
Okay.
this is going to portray 1998 Psycho as way closer. Like, thinking about it, it's going to make 1998 Psycho seem so much closer to regular Psycho than it should be. So, Norman Bates is worth 100 points.
Okay. That puts it out of reach. What
Marion Crane, 10 points.
a
Lila Crane,
range.
5 points. Smith and the detective, 1 point each.
Yeah, it puts it out. Okay. So yeah, so that's safe guard right there. Because yeah, it definitely Anthony Perkins stomps all over Vince Vaughn. So although it's funny because Vince, we'll get to it, but Vince makes some interesting choices with it, which almost seem good for 1998, but when you're comparing it to the flawless performance of Anthony Perkins, it's like, this is what to do. This is what not to do, you know?
Flawless performance. There's one flaw in that performance, maybe, depending on how you look at
Okay. I mean, we'll get to it.
it.
So, all right. So we'll give this one
You
to
get 1 point.
this one's 1 point to 98.
This is Quidditch, bitch. You can score as many points as you want, but you catch that golden snitch, the other team wins.
Yeah, it's kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyway, where everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah.
You know? But well, there's also wait now we could also do, we could also, if anything, give like an honorable mention point to Gus Van Sant in '98 because he managed to cast James Remar as the highway patrolman in the movie, and James Remar looks identical to the original guy. You know,
He
they
don't.
look identical. And I was like, oh my God, it's like, did James Remar time travel? You know, holy shit.
That is true. That was a impressive recasting if you're just looking for looks.
Well, and he even kind of sounds like him too, because James Remar has that like gravelly kind of voice, that like deeper, almost gravelly voice, and so does the highway patrolman. But then you take the other like lesser actors of, especially when you take those the related characters to the cop, you take John Anderson as the car salesman versus Roach from Point Break as the car salesman. I mean, James LeGros is a good little, like, you know, creep, but Anderson takes it. But then there's then there's Caroline, who is the other assistant in that works with Marion. Yeah. He is played by Rita Wilson, aka Mrs. Tom Hanks in 98, versus Alfred Hitchcock's daughter in the original. Now, there's one very specific choice that is made by Rita Wilson that actually makes the character a little better, because it makes her bitchy. And it's the scene when the cowboy guy is flirting with Marion. He goes into the office, and Caroline comes over, and she says, "Oh, he was really flirting with you. He must have seen my wedding ring." You know, like, implying that, oh, you're the backup to me. Which, when Hitchcock's daughter says it in 60, he plays it very innocently, like as if that was the reason this dude didn't hit on her, because he respected the institution of marriage. In Rita Wilson in 98, though, she is flat out just throwing shade at Marion, just like, oh, he must have seen my wedding ring to go for you. You know, in that case, it's funny because we have Alfred Hitchcock's daughter, who thankfully looks more like Alfred Hitchcock's wife or the mother, versus Janet Leigh, stone cold knockout. Then there is Rita Wilson, a stone cold knockout, versus 1998 Anne Heche. I'm sorry, slander the dead, but 1998 Anne Heche is not who I'm going for. I'm going, if anything, for Volcano Anne Heche. You know, she looks a little bit better in that. I think it's mostly the hair, though.
Yeah, that, the haircut.
The haircut does not help her.
So next we have actually the one character I think is like really a debate on which one's better, the detective.
It is. I thought you were going to say Bobby from the hardware store. We're going with Rando Kid in 1960 versus Flea in 1998.
That's true.
It's funny because he's credited, I think he's credited in the end credits as Flea. But in the opening credits, they have him as his birth name of Mike Balzari. It's like, so when you see that, you're like, who the hell is Mike Balzari? Or like, even like your Chili Pepper heads are probably like, oh my God, it's Flea. Like, don't ruin the surprise for everybody else. You know?
What's with 90s movies and casting random Chili Pepper?
Well, Flea's the one, dude. Kiedis only had the one role, I think, in Point Break. Flea was all over the place. He was in Back to the Future 2. He was in this. He's in The Big Lebowski. He was pretty heavy hitter when it came to a small character.
That's the Family Guy skit where Brian's like, I have Flea. And Stewie's like, you have Fleas? He's like, no, worse. I have the guitarist from the Red Hot Chili the bassist from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Right, exactly. But, all right, so we have a fairly, I'm not going to say a close race when it comes to the detective between William H. Macy and Martin Balsam. But it's only because they play them, they make the same, the character is the same, but Martin Balsam is more of a, like, he's more cocky and more of a dick, no pun intended, for the private eye thing. William H. Macy, on their hand, is just kind of like, he seems like an annoying little know-it-all kind of thing. But they're both the same character. Like, there's no...
And they're like the Columbo-type detective, like...
Right. I think it really comes down to, who would you buy more as a private detective? William H. Macy, the guy who looks like the realtor who sold you your house, or, you know, everybody's, like, nice guy neighbor Or Martin Balsam, who looks like he's seen some shit in this private detective world. Like, he comes straight out of a film noir movie, you know?
That is, looks wise, it's easily Balsam.
Yeah.
Performance wise, I kind of like Macy.
I do. I think Macy is better simply because, and I don't know, maybe it's just because Martin Balsam's been in other things. Like, Martin Balsam had a good career.
It
William
might
H.
be the
Macy.
rest of the movie around them. Like, Martin Balsam's playing against a masterpiece around him, so he doesn't stand out so much. Where Macy is the lone bright spot in an otherwise terrible movie, so you give him some recognition.
It's like the inverse, you know? It's the opposite, whereas the movie sucks, but he's great. And the other one is.
It's the movie equivalent of the cheerleader effect, where,
Exactly. But yeah,
yeah.
it's got, I feel like we can give the point to this one to 98 because William H. Macy is, he does elevate not a nothing character, but he elevates a lesser character, and it's really just dead meat. He's just dead meat. That's all he is. I would much
Yeah.
rather see William H. Macy do this character, experience him doing this character, as opposed to Martin Balsam, who's great. He's just not as good as the movie around him, which is, it's kind of like being the worst major leaguer. You know,
It's like
you're a major league professional baseball player. You're better than 99% of baseball players on the planet. You just happen to not be as good as the other 1%, you know?
It's kind of like the 8 hole hitter on the Dodgers being compared to the 3 hole hitter on the Athletics.
it's very much big fish, little pond kind of
Yeah.
thing, but it's big fish, big pond. That's the only problem. But yeah, so okay. So it looks like my math is right. I think we have a 2-0 lead for 98 at the moment.
Don't worry, that'll change.
So for now, 1998 is the better movie.
Now,
But
let's get into. I guess we'll start, even though I think Lila's less important, we'll get into Marion and her half of the story now.
okay. Now it's funny that we're choosing to do Marion first because she's the one that everyone remembers. She is the
Yeah.
iconic character from
I'm
the
only
movie.
doing her half first because it comes first in the it
Right.
makes it easier to talk about the movie because it
Yeah, it
comes
makes
first.
sense. That makes sense. Okay. It's okay, so we got obviously legendary Janet Leigh versus Anne Heche. And
And Janet is so, all right, 10 points right now to start
it's a
from.
runaway. But Janet Leigh runs away almost immediately. And then the thing is, Janet Leigh plays her role as Marion so conflictedly. You can tell that this woman is just conflicted about almost every move she's making. She knows what she wants, she can't have it, but she knows how to get it. And she. When presented with the opportunity to steal the $40,000, she sees that as her ticket to getting what she wants and getting the different life, getting the new life with Sam and all that. And she plays it as like legit nerves. She's nervous. She is very conflicted about actually going through with it when she does. And eventually she does, after talking to Norman, come around to being like, you know what? This was a mistake. I'm going to go back and I'm going to make things right. Whereas with Anne Heche, I just don't get the same feeling from her. I get
Not at
more of
all.
a, it's, you get more of a, I stumbled upon 400. Now it's funny because they do have to change it for inflation, the $400,000 this time. It's like, oh, this just kind of fell in my lap. What do I get to do with it next? You know, she really does,
The
you don't.
real horror of Psycho, hearing you could buy a house for $4,000.
Dude, 40. It was
40
40 G's.
$40,000.
Which the car is funny because when she buys the car, she trades in her car for a new one. And Only it only costs her, I think it was what, 7 grand?
$700.
It's 7 grand or 700. 700 in the original. And then it's 4 grand to, with a Taurus in 1998 to buy a Volvo. And I was like, I'm not sure the guy got the right end of the deal on that one. Like, I think that Volvo is a little more expensive than a Taurus and 4 grand, you know? But it's everything that Anne Heche does. You just, I don't know, you don't get the sense of conflict there. You just get the sense that she stumbled into an opportunity and is running with it.
It's I get very much more of like the damsel, like just not a super real character with Anne Heche. It's like very damsel in distress kind of.
You don't, it's funny because even though they basically use the same script, you there's just something about the way
The
that Anne,
delivery is not there.
it's the delivery and her chemistry, which is funny because the Janet Leigh has to work with John Gavin, who's basically just a chiseled jaw and khakis. There, those two have more chemistry than Anne Heche and Viggo Mortensen, you know, the shirtless sex machine that is Viggo Mortensen in 1998, you know. Anybody should have chemistry with that dude, you know? But it's funny because you just feel like these two are like, oh, we just kind of stumbled into fucking, and now we just, you think we should, you know, try this thing as an actual relationship. Whereas you can tell that Sam and Marion in the original have been doing this for a while and are now at the point where they're like, look, we gotta fish or cut bait here, you know? It's, we have to do this. This, I'm sick of this shit. We gotta like make the next. And
Little
you just don't
known
get that in
fact,
the
though,
new one.
about Viggo Mortensen in this movie is he also kicked a medieval style helmet for some reason and broke his foot in this movie.
You just had one laying around the hardware store for some reason. Just kicking a hard hat in the hardware store. But, and that's the thing, because then you got to take the interactions between with Lila, not with Lila, with Marion, between she and Norman, because the interplay between Norman in the original, between Norman and Marion with Anthony Perkins and Janet, those two, it's very much this woman is in some shit. She's seen a little bit of the world. She's a lot more worldly than him. He is just the mama's boy that has never really left the motel, but he's got that dark secret. And Anthony Perkins plays the innocent part of it so well that
He
it's almost
does.
like a, he's almost like a surrogate, like stepmother to him, in the sense that she's trying to give him guidance on what to do and how to get out from
Which
underneath the thumb of his real mother.
she is a big reason that the first half of Psycho is, to me, the much better half of Psycho. Like, you kind of, it's almost like the Lion King thing where it's like the first half is incredible. The second half's great, but like definitely a step down from the first half.
Yeah, like we're fucking around with Timon and Pumbaa in the form of Sam and Lila doing their little detective chase that they're trying to do, you know? But with the credit goes to really Anthony Perkins being so good with Janet Leigh.
Yeah, Anthony Perkins and Janet Leigh are outstanding in Psycho.
Right.
Like, they are incredible.
Which is funny because, and it works because he's so boyish and she's so sexy. That's the thing. You're like, wow, these are, this is a conflict of worlds right here. Yeah, somehow they're working together. But then you move to Anne Heche and that haircut with Vince Vaughn, who is just a hulking monster compared to her. My man's like 6'5". She's a tiny little woman, and she looks like he's been on a 6-year murder spree, you
And
know?
you know, Gus Van Sant really did try to do a an interesting thing with the story where you take the two best characters original and make them the two worst characters in the remake.
It is. Again, it's like I'm remade it so no one else would kind of situation. But it's, and it's funny because Vince Vaughn, and this, we'll get to this in his choice of performance. Vince Vaughn is menacing as Anthony Perkins. And it really has to do with
Has
the
anything he's
combination.
playing Anthony Perkins?
I mean, I'm sorry. It's, yeah, man, as, that'd be funny. It's Vince Vaughn as Anthony Perkins as Norman Bates.
Now I just want them to make a dramatic biography of Anthony Perkins and have Vince Vaughn play
That would be funny. I would like that. I would very much like to see that.
him.
But no, Vince as Norman is he's incredibly menacing. And it's just the way it's the hair, it's the shaved head, it's the
The
bags under
fact
his
that he
eyes.
turns like beet red.
It's the bags under his eyes. It is the it's that little like Vince Vaughn giggle that he has. It's all of that. It's just it piles on top of things and
Right, that's Anthony. All right, I feel like I shouldn't get into this until we get to comparing our titular psychos.
so, I mean, obviously, we said Jenna Lee runs away with it. It's a thing because Jenna
And
Lee.
the first half of 1960 Psycho is like the gap between the first half of 1960 Psycho and the first half of 1998 Psycho is like the distance from here. I'm not even going to say to Pluto. I'm not going to say to the sun. I'm going to say to, like, I don't know, the Andromeda Galaxy. That seems like a long enough distance.
The edge of the universe, like the cafe at the end of the world from what is it? Hitchhiker's Guide or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So, Craig, it's midpoint.
Yep.
Mike, how is your abomination?
So, like, I think it just tastes like the fruited sour with habanero, where I'm like, it's like a dulled down version of that. The other flavors did not come through very well because I guess habanero is just that overpowering. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, who'd have thought habanero would hit the flavors so hard?
Now, I thought there was a chance that this mixture would actively be dissolving me from the inside. That hasn't happened yet, but
Yet.
I'll let you know if it starts to.
Yet. We're gonna be pushing Mike's body into a swamp at the end of this.
I know, don't worry. I'll just dissolve here, probably.
Nice. Yeah, my Something Cold by Edmunds Oast Brewing Company in South Carolina was very good. Now I just happen to crack open. I cracked open a Bone Saw because I had some Bone Toberfest left over. So, because at the end of this, we will be dealing with a corpse. We will be dealing with a mummified body. So, Bone Saw for all your mummified body needs. But it's yeah, so all right. Next up, we're doing the Lila half.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that means we are taking Julianne Moore versus Vera Miles.
And I
And
will say, Julianne Moore at least brought boxing gloves to this fight.
she did. And she is the only one, okay, she's the other one, I will say, Vince Vaughn being the first, that chose to do the character a little bit differently. And Vera Miles very much plays this as a concerned sister who does not approve of what her sister has done or her life, basically. And so she's very upfront and, for lack of a better term, bitchy to everyone. But she's bitching in 1960s way, which means that she's just kind of abrasive. Where, and then you can then she backs off by saying basically like, "I'm sorry, I'm worried about my sister," kind of thing. Julianne Moore, on the other hand, comes in swinging. She is just a bitch from the beginning to the end. She has no time for anyone, and she will stop at nothing to get what she wants, bar even talking to someone as if they're a regular human being. She is at 12 on a scale of 10 this entire movie, and no human being would ever A, act this way, or B, get anywhere with this kind of attitude talking to perfect strangers.
Which honestly makes her kind of entertaining.
It makes her kind of entertaining in the sense that what is happening? Like it's that what is going on here situation. But even so, what makes it more entertaining is that she has to go places with her Walkman on.
Yeah.
She has that yellow Sony Walkman headphones on the
whole
that's movie.
One thing that I'm like, people don't criticize enough is the 1998 additions to Psycho. Like, it's basically a shot-for-shot remake, and they just throw a Walkman in there.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They even make it a point that she has to go back for her Walkman because she won't leave the hardware store without it. Why? Like, what's the point of this? Did Sony pay you some money, Gus, to say the word Walkman in your movie? Is that why?
I'd assume so.
I would hope so, you know? But
he's like, I want to make a shot for shot remake, but I want people to know it's 1998. How am I going to do this? What product can I put in this movie that only define the singular year of 1998? The Walkman.
Right. Yeah, he might as well have had everyone offering each other Snapple, you know? There's no other way that you could pinpoint what time period this took place in.
Everyone is listening to Dookie from Green Day.
Right. Yeah, they're all just, you know, they're listening to No Doubt and Eminem's Slim Shady LP.
Yeah. Nirvana is huge.
Yeah, they're just everybody's just still sad over Kurt killing himself, you know. So they're really listening to the Nevermind a lot.
Being in the 90s, grunge doesn't make nearly a big enough appearance in this movie.
I mean, it's 98, so it's at the end. Like, we're in the boy band era at this point. So if anything, she should be listening to like NSYNC or Backstreet Boys. But Lillian is not the kind. Or Lila. Lila is not the type that listens to boy bands. She listens to She basically listens to, I'm going to guess, like, Four Non-Blondes, but or, like, other angry woman music.
I think there's a chance that she was listening to Don't Speak by No Doubt.
That would be great if we got a scene like American Psycho, where Patrick Bateman's walking through the hall with his Walkman on, and he's listening, like, Walking on Sunshine or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, that would be great if we got that for her, but it was just No Doubt, like, just a girl playing in her headphones.
That's or what the Four Non-Blonde song.
Or What's Going On? Yeah, whatever.
What's going on?
That would be great. It would be great.
What's
that would
going
be so
on?
Right. And then she's like walking around, not asking that to people, but like singing it. They're like, what the hell is she doing? She's looking for her sister. Just let her go. You know. It is funny because Julianne Moore has been quoted as saying, obviously, I'm sure when this came out, people were like, why did you do the things you did? Like, it's like genuinely asking, like, why did you ruin the performance? And Julianne Moore was like, I wanted to make her more confrontational. You know, it's like, well, yeah, but you went too far with it, you know? Like, Vera Miles makes her confrontational, but she does it in a believable way, you know? She doesn't do it in a completely psychopathic way.
Now I'm thinking of a 1998 Psycho where she exclusively answers questions in Four Non-Blondes verses.
That would be great. What a great thing to do, like a press tour. Just never mention it to anybody. Like, what the hell? Is she quoting Four Non-Blondes again? It'd be like, it's like Michael Keaton and with TLC and the other guys, you know.
Mike,
you're frozen. Okay. I thought we lost you for a second. You were frozen.
I thought I lost you for a second, but I was like, I was like, you get the equivalent of the captain from the other guys where she just closed.
She's randomly,
what are you doing, Lila? Took a deep breath and I got real high.
Right. Are you quoting Four Non-Blondes right now? I had no idea what he was talking about.
When she just comes in, every time she comes in the room, what's going on? You sang that in the melody of Four Non-Blondes, Lila.
You gotta be doing this on purpose. I gotta tell you, I had no idea what you're talking about.
No one says that unless they're quoting Four Non-Blondes.
That would be great. That would have made her performance better. It would have made it a little better. But no, it's obviously Vera Miles. For being Vera Miles, and it's, I mean, again, this is a woman who's like, you know, Hitchcock Hitchcock Blonde. She could have been. She's also one of the few that are actually still alive from that cast. I think she might be the only one that's still alive from that cast. But like she was in a bunch of stuff. Like she had a decent career, you know. She was working up until 1995, apparently, as an actress. But you know, she was in a couple episodes of Murder, She Wrote. She was in a whole bunch of stuff, you know. She came back in Psycho too, but it's such a shame because Julianne Moore was in that point in her career in 98, kind of at the beginning of it, where she was basically taking roles and trying to make a name for herself. But unfortunately, she's a good actress, but she made a name for herself by making the weirdest possible choice in this movie, and it's to make that character so unlikable that you lose all sympathy for her, that her sister's been killed, you know?
You know what? She probably idolizes Stevie Nicks, her version of the character.
That'd be funny. She's walking around random ass scarves and shit, you know, just being Stevie Nicks. But so, who's that leave us?
Yeah,
That leave us
or
with.
she like listens to the Bangles or something.
Yeah, I again, I don't see her listening to anything with a male in it. With any, there's nobody with a penis in the music that she listens
Yeah.
to. But all right, so
So yeah,
Leon.
so and then I will the second half of the movie is definitely a step down in Psycho 1960, but it's still like the distance from Earth to Pluto. Maybe not the Andromeda Galaxy, but Earth to Pluto better than
Yeah,
98.
it's and that's the thing. In the original, Sam and Lila's little like detective squad thing that they got going on. But the better thing is when they go to the Bates Motel and they're doing their little like pretend to be husband and wife thing. They're talking there before that they talk to the sheriff and he reveals that Norman DeBates' mother's been dead for 10 years or whatever. And it's very
Yeah.
those two are very they're very believable in those roles and in that situation. Whereas Julianne Moore and Viggo Mortensen's like the dumb guy to her, like, you know, straight cop. You know, he's dumb cop to her good cop, or her bad cop, really. And it's just I don't see, he's got the demeanor as Sam Loomis as the kind of guy that just doesn't want to put up with a woman like that. And Julianne Moore is so aggressive and she is so over the top and so like feisty and mean to people that
That
I don't feel like it's kind of unfortunate. It's uncomfortable to watch her.
it's like bad cop and dumb, slightly uncaring cop.
Yeah, it's like who gives a shit cop, you know? But yeah, it's just so interesting that Gus Van Sant would be like, oh yeah, no, this is the right, this is the choice. This is the choice for this character.
Yep.
It's like, okay, sure thing, bud. Whatever you say.
All right, so Psycho 1960 is now up 15-2. I wonder
Nice.
who's going to win the actual Psycho.
That's
The...
the thing. Of the Norman Bateses.
know,
I
it's
think it's
real close.
Very close. If being in wildly apart was close. But that's the thing. Okay. Anthony Perkins, legendary, is Norman Bates. No one remembers him as anything else.
And he's perfect as Norman Bates.
Perfect.
He's like got a kind of young man handsomeness to him, where and he's very unintimidating, and he doesn't like I like growing up when I did, I knew the ending of Psycho essentially by the time I cared enough about movies to go and watch it. So I'm watching it knowing Norman Bates it has a split personality and killed and is the killer. But watching it in 1960, I'm going through and being like, oh yeah, like I buy him as the son who has a psychotic mother that he just can't, like that he's just too devoted to.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, and Hitchcock was very famous for that, especially with this movie, of locking down the press and the responses and the reviews to this movie. He made sure that people, when they saw this movie, knew nothing about it. They knew nothing about it. They were coming in, and when the shower scene happened, people like legitimately lost their mind because they were like, "Holy shit! Oh my God! What is this in this movie?" You know.
Which we got like Norman Bates and the shower scene. It's almost like the NBA equivalent of Dr. J and his windmill dunk, where it's like that type of behavior did not fly in the NBA before Dr. J did it. Where it's like, yeah, this movie is definitely not the most gory, and it doesn't show nudity really in the original version, but it opened the door for horror movies to have gore and show nudity.
That's the
Now
thing.
you can view that as a good thing or a bad thing, but it is the trailblazer that opened that door.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sure there are creeps somewhere on the internet because this thing's in four available in 4K. You can go frame by frame in that original, and I'm sure you can spot Janet Leigh's nipple or a hint of bush or something like that, because there's no way that Hitchcock allowed her to do anything like to cover up anything, you know? He was like, "You're in the shower. You would be naked. So you're naked," you know? And because it was 1960 or 59 when they filmed it, everyone was awful in the studio system. So Janet Leigh was probably like, "All right, I guess everyone's just seeing me full on naked now. So whatever, I guess we're doing this." But Anne Heche, on the other hand, oh, and then Janet Leigh, her shower scene also has the benefit of being in black and white. So you can hide the identity of the killer better. Whereas full color, all on display, you can tell that that wig that is being worn by Vince Vaughn is the worst wig you've ever seen. The blood is, it's bright red, and it doesn't wash away as well when Norman goes to mop it up. Anne Heche's butthole is wide open when she falls over the edge of that shower.
She like that shot. They were direct porn. They had to have been.
Gus Van Sant had to have known what he saw, and there's no way he's reviewing it going, "Oh, we got to put a shadow or something," you know? And it's like when it came out, I'm sure Anne was watching it in like the press screen or whatever, or like the whenever they were showing her in some theater with an audience or whatever. When that happened, she probably just looked at Gus going, "Are you fucking serious, bro?" You know? It's like, "My asshole is on
Thank
screen."
God I got my asshole bleached before this scene.
It's, oh yeah, that kind of went for the wax. But it's like, it would be like, I think Anne Heche would probably react better because it's not your Sharon Stone vagina shot. Like, there's no like damn near close up of it. Like, it hits you and you're like, "Wait, did I just, I think I just saw what I think I just saw," right? You know, it's not like, "Oh, that's her asshole," you know? It's like, you know, basic instinct is. But the problem is that the color ruins everything. When that
It
color
does.
is added to this movie, it takes away any kind of mystery or any way to tastefully hide identities, such as a killer in his mother's clothes, you know?
Especially so, A, Vince Vaughn is not small enough to pass for a
Hell
elderly
no.
woman.
This is a massive woman coming into this bathroom.
B, he is at Like, if you watch 1998 in a vacuum and saw that guy instantly, he doesn't even have to say a word. You go, oh, the killer, right there, got him.
That's him. That's him.
That's him,
It's
officer,
definitely him.
bag him.
That's him right there. That's your guy.
And the fact that
But
he turned, like, the entire movie, he must have been, like, just pounding shots and turning red from the alcohol.
that, and he's just like sitting up at night, like twirling a knife in his fingers. You know, he's not sleeping. You know, this man has never slept, you know. And
No, Anthony Perkins. You listen to him, he's like, oh, he's kind of poor, naive, is too attached to his mother, like. And then Vince Vaughn, you're like, oh, I think he might have kidnapped and killed his mother.
He definitely did. Like it is, and that's what it ends up being, because Norman does poison and kill the two of them. But it's the two performances for this, again, like I said, are a what to do and what not to do. And Anthony Perkins is the clear 100% gold standard how to play this character. It there's nuance to it. There is conflict. He's got that boyish innocence, but also that like quiet, menacing nature.
Oh my God, the second she suggests putting his mother in a home, that turn, oh, that is such a good scene.
It is. And then the funny thing is at the end, he brings it back by saying, like, he's like, and that includes me. I've thought of it too. And he brings it back in, and you're like, wow, this dude is great. Vince Vaughn, on the other hand, he's playing Norman at first, just kind of like a dorky kind of guy. And then when that parlor scene happens, the menacing gets turned up and it keeps going. And then when he gets to that scene where he has to talk about the mental institution and pulling it back and saying, I of course it crossed my mind as well, to give him credit, it's well performed. It is well performed. Vince Vaughn nails the performance of it for this movie and for that version of the movie. But because he's got like tears in his eyes, you can tell that he's emotional about it. The problem comes when he looks through the peephole and audibly masturbates. And it's like, I think it was implied in Hitchcock's. Because in 1960, you couldn't do that kind of thing. So it's implied that's what he's doing. Taking it and making it overt and making it out there and directly depicted, that is a choice. And it's an interesting one because the more tasteful choice is to leave it up to the audience to think about what he's doing. And it's the problem then becomes everything after that. After he dumps the body in the swamp, when Arbogast comes, and then again when he dumps Arbogast's body in the swamp, and the best part is how the two of them handle when Sam and Lila show up. When in the 1960s one, when Sam and Lila first show up, they're there. Now at this point, Norman has had two randos who are the first customers in years at this place. He has had to kill them. He knows that these two are somehow looking for these two, and he knows that whatever they say is going to be a lie, but he has to play it cool like he doesn't. So he comes down, he's got his hands in his pocket, he's kind of like hopping down. Sam's like, "Oh, we're newlyweds here," blah blah blah, and the response that Perkins gives is so great. He just like laughs it off. He's like, "Okay," just kind of like, "I don't believe you, but whatever," It's just the way he laughs it off is so perfect. Whereas when Vaughn does it, he's almost as if he's like, whatever, I know who you are. Okay, I believe you. Let's do this. It's like, this is the next step we have to do. Whereas you believe Anthony Perkins is just this dude that's kind of gotten a little cocky after killing people, Whereas Vince Vaughn has killed several people. This is not his first rodeo. And it's such a very different
You come in and
portrayal.
investigate me. I dress up as my mother and kill you. Let's get this over with.
Exactly. And the only thing that, and it's a choice that Vince Vaughn makes, or maybe Gus Van Sant told him to make, but I'm sure it was Vaughn. The only thing that he does that I will say is a little different and slightly better than what Perkins does is he plays him a little more feminine. Like he plays him a little more effeminate and almost to the point of like the stereotypical, like, gay nuances that he has, like mannerisms almost, especially like the tight turtleneck that he's wearing and just the way he kind of, it's weird. He moves differently than Anthony Perkins does. And it's almost as if they were trying to subtly hint at Norman having this like mom complex, this Oedipus complex, or whatever it was, and being very conflicted as to who he was. Now, that's just not as a killer, but also as like a man. Like, what is he straight? Is he gay? Is he bi? What is it? Whereas with Perkins in 60, the only conflict you get there is the fact that he knows he shouldn't kill people, but he does because of the other personality. And it's the conflict is keeping the personality at bay and making cleaning up after it, you know, whereas there's almost an outright serial killer vibe you get from Vaughn the whole time. And there's a whole lot different. There's a whole lot, bunch of different stuff going on with him than there is with Perkins in the original. And it's weird because it adds to it, but it, at the same time, it takes away from the character completely.
Yeah, because to me, Norman Bates is supposed to be at least the one, the personality that shows most of the time is supposed to be relatively innocent. Like, obviously he's got, like, when he cleans up after the other personality, he is involving himself, essentially. Like, he knows he has to cover his tracks. But if you were to take away the other personality, Norman Bates would be a relatively innocent person. Where yeah, exactly. Vince's version, I'm like, I don't know.
No, there's really, in my mind, there's really no question. It's like, the only question would come down to, and this is where I think the decision of the 98 one's a little better. In 1960, and it's one of the things in the movie that people still get hung up on, even though I personally believe that people interpret the scene incorrectly. It's at the end when the cop, when the detective or the psychologist is explaining what's going on with Norman. And why he
Which
dresses
I
up like
I will say is the worst scene in the original movie, I think.
It is, but not because of the reason I think a lot of people say it is. A lot of people say it is because it's transphobic, is what they say. Now,
oh, no, I think it is because I think that it's there because Hitchcock did not believe the audience would just, like, he just needed to throw in a whole bunch of explanation because he didn't trust that his audience would what was going on.
And to be honest, in 1960, they probably didn't, you know, to be perfectly honest, they probably didn't know about dissociative identity disorder, that kind of thing, multiple personalities, all that. The mental health care system back then was not what it was in 19, at least in, even in 1998. So I would venture a guess that, yeah, I agree with you that it's too explainy. You know, but I feel like Hitchcock had to explain,
yeah.
You know, or else his audience would have walked out.
Yeah, I can't really think of a better way to do it.
Right. Like, the audience would have walked out like, what the fuck was that about? You know, it's like, what happened? They're like, why was it the mother? Why was he dressed like that? You know, it would be, they wouldn't know the answers. Whereas in 1998, we do know the answer. And that scene is pared down. And Robert Forster is a better actor in that role because he's Robert Forster. But the thing is that I think people misinterpret about the original is that it's transphobic and that character is explaining, or the two cops are saying, that Norman is, because he's trans, he did these things. The trans behavior is what led him to murder, which is not true. When you watch the movie, you have to do a couple like logical somersaults to get to that point. Like, it's not what's on screen. It really isn't. And it's not what the doctor said. Even the doctor says, no, that's not true. He even says that. Like, the doctor says, what you just said is not true. He says he's not doing it for sexual reasons. This is a multiple personality situation where the other personality is dressed like this. And it's not because he's a transvestite. It's not because he's some deviant, you know, that you think he is. It's literally the other personality getting dressed. But I think people hear the word transvestite and it triggers their negative reactions that a lot of pieces from that time would have done, and a lot of wrong decisions other pieces would have made. But Hitchcock doesn't do that. And I think he gets unfairly blamed for people that say he did when he doesn't. Whereas Van Zandt chose to take that part out completely, which is right. You don't need it. I mean, you really don't. To explain why he's dressed the way he is also explains how the murders got done and why you saw a person in a horrible wig pack up Anne Heche in the shower. You know, it makes sense without mentioning the transvestite word, you know? And That I think is just a benefit of being taking place in 1998 and audiences knowing both the ending of the original Psycho and a more full idea of mental health and mental disorders and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, I will say my one complaint about Psycho 1960 Norman Bates. And it's not really a, because it's kind of like, how do you perceive the character to an extent on how this line is delivered? Where he's like, mother, the blood, the blood.
I can see that. It is. It's very, it is kind of weird, like how he says it. It's very, it is kind of odd. But, well, oh, that's the other thing. When he does go to clean up the shower, he looks and he sees Marion is dead. Slumped out of the bathtub, and he does kind of like dive out of the bathroom, like go onto the wall, and like covers his mouth as if he's disgusted by what he sees. He might throw up, but he doesn't dry heave in the original. Vince Vaughn like dry heaves a couple times during the cleanup, as if this all disgusts him. And I don't think that's I don't think that was a necessary thing to add. You know, I don't think we needed that. Like, it's almost better if he robotically cleans up after his mother and isn't disgusted by it, you know, or doesn't have this aversion to blood or death or whatever it is.
He breaks out. He's like, oh, here mom goes killing again.
Here she goes killing again, you know. But it does crack me up because Vince Vaughn, to his credit, I'll give him the credit, he made his version of Norman Bates stand out. Now, it does stand out for the wrong reasons, but at least he did something that would make sense for the character. Unlike Julianne Moore, who completely acts like a nut job because she wanted to make that character a little more aggressive. When it's like, yeah. Did she need to be? You know, did she need to be a bitch? You know?
Was this like, really necessary?
I don't think it was necessary. Whereas maybe having Norman masturbate, it's a little on the nose, but it's a thing that happens. Maybe having him being disgusted by blood or death or whatever and having to clean up, that's an interesting little twist that the mother side can do it, but he's not that type of person, even though he can dump a dead body into a swamp like it's nothing. But it's, and then playing him a little femme is a choice. And it's an interesting one because it's different. And it's the little twists of different, not the completely different. It would almost be as if when Sam Loomis comes on screen, if he's acting like Billy from Scream, you know? Like if he's acting like Stu from Scream, that would be different. Like, wow, you made a choice here, man. You really did, you know? But it's the problem with the 98 one is that the differences take away. They don't add to the performances. They take away from the performances. And then there's the random ass. Now, this is the thing that I completely do not understand. And I can't seem to find anything that would answer my question. When Arbogast is murdered and he's sent that legendary fall down the stairs that Hitchcock does, where it's that zoom and pan and whatever, the Hitchcock camera work. Legendary scene in the original. In the new one, in 1998, I will give them credit that they add a couple slashes to William H. Macy's face. He's being stabbed. That makes sense. What doesn't make sense is the flash of the naked blonde woman in the bunny mask that flashes on screen. And then when he gets a few stairs down, there's another one of like a deer on a foggy road. And then it cuts back and he falls to the ground like nothing happened. It's like, wait, what the fuck was that? It's Fight Club? Did someone stick this in here without us knowing?
Why are we having a Shining moment where it's like the kid looks into the room and the dog's giving the butler a
The butler's getting blown by the guy in the bear suit. It's like, what's happening right now? Like, where did this come from? Why are we doing this? There's no other allusions to any of this shit in the movie and anywhere else in the movie.
You can't even explain it like The Omen. Like, why'd you add the dreams? To add some jump scares.
Right, to add some weird shit to it, you know? to make it my own. But it's like, well, why didn't you do that at any other point in the movie? The only other thing that I will say, because there is that great cameo, non-cameo cameo at the time in the original Psycho of Ed Knight, the end of 1960, as the cop that opens the door to Norman's cell.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's fucking Ted Knight right there. You know, it's, oh my God, it's Ted Knight. I wish that Gus Van Sant had, I don't know, somehow cast some other young actor that was like a recognizable actor at the time to play that role. Just so you could be like, oh, Ted Knight in this one. And then, I don't know, Leonardo DiCaprio in this
Matt
one.
Matt Damon.
And Matt Damon. It's like Matt Damon in this one. Like, that would be funny. But it's not what we get. Instead, we get whatever happened in the 1998 Psycho. It's a very interesting shot-for-shot remake, yet it's almost as if Funny Games did it better because they literally did shot-for-shot of it.
The only time to me when a shot-for-shot remake is like the only reason I can see it's like, oh, it's a foreign film. American audiences sometimes have an aversion to foreign films, so we're going to make it for an American audience. That's the only time I'm like, okay, I get why you made a shot-for-shot remake.
Yeah, and that was Funny Games. Like, it was a movie that failed in Germany and Austria. He wanted to make it for American audiences, and it failed in American audiences, too. So I was like, yeah, well, at least you tried. But it was also his own movie, you know? And he was trying it for a different market. This is, you can't take a movie like Psycho and try to shot-for-shot remake it. You just can't. Because the only thing that adds to it when you do that is, by benefit of technology advancing like it did in 38 years, Gus Van Sant had the opportunity to do the opening shot that Hitchcock wanted to do, but couldn't because technology limitations were there. He originally wanted to zoom into that hotel room in a one shot. He couldn't do it because it was 1960. Gus Van Sant could do it, so he did it. And it was like, oh, that is a nice little nod right there that you're being faithful to the original. The problem, though, is that
is
you
the
stuck
movie.
Is the rest that comes after, you know? It's the movie that follows. The
problem is you did more than that scene.
Right. The problem is you didn't just stop, you know? But, and it's even weirder because then it's like you have Bernard Herrmann's legendary score, and all they did was have Danny Elfman cover it. You know, Danny Elfman's a good composer on his own right. He's legendary in his own right. But all he did was do the exact same score the exact same way. You know, it's like, why?
You have the brilliant mind behind the music of The Nightmare Before Christmas, and you don't let him use it.
I mean, Jack Skellington, right there. You know, it makes sense.
Now I'm thinking of Norman Bates just walking around singing, "What's this? What's this?
What's this? It's my mother's dad, corpse."
The mother personality kills her in the shower. Norman Bates wakes up and just starts saying, "What's this? What's this?
What's this? Is this Aunt Hitch's butthole? What's this? What's this?" But what really cracks me up, though, is to watch this movie and see that there was Kevin Smith and Ralph Garman have their Hollywood Babylon, you know, podcast or show or whatever they do. One of their categories on the show is Anne Heche's butthole. And there's a little song that goes along with it. And it's like, Anne Heche's butthole, let's all go inside. You know, it's like, and that's the reason, this movie is the reason that exists. And I was like, if anything, it just inspired some stupid comedy bit. You know, it's like, but poor Anne Heche, you know, at least, hopefully,
poor
at least
Anne Heche, she didn't deserve this.
And at least she was, I guess, a good sport about it, you know? Unfortunately, she did pass away 2 years ago, so we don't know if she's going to turn around like Sharon Stone did and act like she didn't know what was going on, you know? But it is funny that the little changes in 1988, it's like, wow, okay, the thing you remember is Anne Heche's butthole. Like, that's what you remember. That's what we're taking away from that remake of 1998 of 1960 Psycho. So I think, again, even if we didn't adjust the scoring, I think Psycho 60 runs away with this one because,
No,
in my opinion,
Psycho 1960 wins 115-2.
Right, there you go. Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, there are very few perfect movies. And in my opinion, Psycho is a perfect movie. It's a perfect movie from beginning to end. There is, I have no notes for the legendary Alfred Hitchcock. But maybe Janet Leigh's butthole, now that I think about it, maybe Janet Leigh's butthole would have been the real thing to get the 1960 audiences, you know, taken aback and in shock. And then
Bring
Jamie Lee
buttholes
Curtis.
to cinema.
Right. And then Jamie Lee Curtis's career would be a lot different. It's like, you know, your mom's butthole was in the movie Psycho? Yes, I know. My mom's butthole was on display in Psycho. You know, I was in Halloween, right?
Yeah, but your butthole wasn't.
But your butthole was nice. Only your boobs have been on screen. Your mom's butthole was on screen.
You haven't filled your shoes.
Right. I wish I was an actor. I shouldn't have become an actor. But, all right. So, Mike, before we roll on to what's going on next week, where can people find us on the internet?
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Happy Hour Films Podcast. You can also find us on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, and just about anywhere else you get your podcast from, thanks to Spotify Podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I happened to look. I think I was looking on Free Player FM, whatever the podcast is that I use, that we're on as well. I happen to notice that we've got like over 200 episodes. At some point, we missed our 200th episode like 11 episodes ago. I was like, oh, all right. I'm trying to go back and figure out which one it was. So, okay, actually, no, we'll do it now. What do we care? All right, so we got 211 was Carrie, 210 Omen, 209 Funny Games, 208 Magnificent Seven, 207 Ed, Dragon Ball Z, 206 Volcano, 205 Olympus Has Fallen, 204 Drop Zone 3, Armageddon 2, Air Force 1, 200. From what I can tell, if my math is right, was our Matrix Dark City episode.
That was a great episode. I'm happy. I'm happy.
Yeah, that was a good one. We did pretty good that episode. Good.
It so, would have been so much more appropriate, though, if we got Point Break and Fast and the Furious as the 200th episode.
If we had somehow managed to make that joint, I think we would have.
If that joint was just coincidentally our 200th episode, like that, I would be thrilled.
Just the stars have aligned, you know? Would have been the Anne Heche's butthole of 200 episodes. But so next week, we have to get back on our movies that are basically the same. Now, this time, I think we're back on track. We're doing similar movies, but this time we have a big run of some pretty great movies. Like movies that are just like, oh, wow, you know, these are two very different movies, but they had the same ideas. And it's very interesting. We're going to start off by revisiting. I believe did we have an episode featuring Paprika?
No.
Or did we just mention it? We just mentioned it because it's the perfect blue guy. It's the same as the perfect blue guy. Who? Spoiler alert, we're getting that guy 2 weeks in a row. But next week will be Paprika and Inception because there's a lot of similarities between the two, and it's more than you would suspect. But next week, though, we will be talking about Paprika and Inception. And until that time, I have been Ross Bacon.
I've been Mike McWigan.
And we'll see you guys next time. So long.